So let's just recommence tonight our studies in 1 Peter. We've got to chapter 3, and we are looking at a very large chunk. We've looked at how to be Christians in the marriage relationship. And now we're moving on. We're still in the practical part of the letter, the second half, and we're looking at a very large part which has to do with living as Christians when we're being opposed. Remember now, we are resident aliens in this world. We don't belong here. We're in a hostile environment. And how can we live then in such a place? And this section, which is difficult to split up into sections, is from verse 8 of chapter 3 all the way to the end of chapter 4. And last time we were in this chapter, we looked at the beginning of this, verse 8. We'll read from verse 8 and we'll read down to verse 12. Finally, all of you, be of one mind, having compassion for one another, love as brothers, be tender-hearted, be courteous, not returning evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, blessing, knowing that you were called to this, that you may inherit a blessing. For he who would love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. Now, what we looked at last time, and we used the image of a hand, was to be people of peace. And we looked at five aspects of that, like fingers of one hand, be of one mind, be compassionate, have brotherly love, be kind, and be humble. That's what the word courteous means. So those five things. Now, rightly or wrongly, we're going to look at verses 9 to 12 by looking at the other hand and dividing this into five. And this hand I'm going to call blessing, right? How do I, as a Christian, survive? No, that's not good enough. We're not gritting our teeth and just getting on with it. How do I thrive in a hostile environment? Well, here's the answer. Did you notice the word blessing? Not returning, verse 9, evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, blessing. Knowing that you've been called to this, that you may inherit a blessing. Now, do you see your life in this world as a blessed life? Now, I'm convinced of this. If we realize that we are here in order to be a blessing and to be blessed, that will transform our attitude to our environment, however difficult it may be. So the hand is called blessing. And there are five things I want us to look at tonight that need to be nurtured. I'm talking about spiritual life now. So this blessing is of God. We weren't like this before, but we've come into Christ. We have the Spirit. We have inherited a blessing. It's not just something in the future. It's something that can be enjoyed now. And there are five things we need to nurture in order to cause this to grow. Didn't we sing? As Tony said, it's so simple. When we walk with the Lord in the light of his word. What is blessing? Here it is. What a glory he sheds on our way. Isn't that a good definition of blessing? A blessing isn't some warm feeling going down your spine. It's this sense of God being near. Isn't that what true blessedness is about? Cooper, where is the blessedness I knew when first I saw the Lord? Where is that soul-refreshing view of Jesus and his word? And Peter quotes from Psalm 34. The words in italics are from that psalm, if you've got a modern translation. And what else is blessing? Verse 12, The eyes of the Lord are on the righteous. God being near, that sense of his nearness, and his ears are open to their prayers, that sense of liberty and freedom in the things of God. You know what I'm talking about, don't you? We sometimes get this and we call it a blessing. For example, we say, wasn't that a blessed meeting? Not every meeting is a blessing. Some meetings are a struggle. I think of some prayer meetings. It's important to be at the prayer meeting. But my, don't you find sometimes it's a battle to get through the prayer meeting? But aren't there other prayer meetings that are blessed? Because there's a sense of freedom there. The ears of the Lord seem to be more open than usual. I like this definition of blessing. The smile of Jesus upon us. Now, we are reconciled to him, so he's always smiling. Just the sun is always there. But to have the clouds dissolved and to have that sense of his warmth, his smile, that's a blessing. Have you known blessing recently? I long for blessed times in this house. Now, let's look at these five things then. These are five things that are to do with obeying the Lord. And they're quite basic things. The first is loving our enemies. Verse 9, not returning evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, blessing. In other words, we bless those who are against us. Now, that's not easy, is it? I heard of one person. He used to confess in the prayer meeting that he was a worm. This is what he'd say, Lord, I'm a worm. He would always say it, I'm a worm. And then one day, somebody said something against this person, and he heard about it, and he went to the pastor, and he was incensed. How dare he say that against me? And the pastor just looked at him and said, hang on, I thought you said you were a worm. I hear you say in your prayer every week you're a worm. If you're a worm, how can you be offended? You get the point? We don't treat those who do things against us as they deserve. How do we treat them? Let me read a quotation here. I found this helpful. As Christians, we can live on one of three levels. We can return evil for good. That's satanic, right? That's satanic. Then the next level, we can return good for good. That's what the world does. That's the human level. But we can return good for evil. And that's divine. Because that's what God has done in Jesus Christ. When did Jesus die for you and me? Did he die for us when we had repented? When we had been reconciled? At what point did he die? Paul says in Romans 5, in this God's love is commended, in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. While we were still his enemies, he loved us. While we were putting our fists up at him, he took upon himself to come to us. And as the children sang last week, and then he threw his loving arms around us while we were still lost. Now, if he's loved the unlovely, if we've experienced Calvary love, shouldn't we forgive those who do things against us? I'm not saying this is easy, but what I'm saying is this, we've experienced it. And so we are not being commanded here to build bricks without straw. We're not being told to do something that is impossible to us. We've been born of the Spirit, and so we nurture this. I found this example very, very helpful. Have you heard of Kim Phuc? I hope I'm pronouncing the name right. A Vietnamese girl. She became very famous because there was a video of the American bombing her village, and then she had her clothes burned, and she just ran naked Do you remember seeing that, those of you who are older? Now, this is what she wrote. On June the 8th, 1972, I ran out from Khao Dai Temple in my village. I'm mispronouncing words here all the time. Trang Bang, South Vietnam. I saw an aeroplane getting lower and then four bombs falling down. I saw fire everywhere around me. Then I saw the fire over my body, especially on my left arm. My clothes had been burned off by fire. Now, those were her enemies, weren't they? Doing that to her. I was 9 years old, but I still remember my thoughts at that moment. I would be ugly and people would treat me in a different way. My picture was taken in that moment and it went all over the world. And then, this is what happened to her. She spent time in the library reading a lot of religious books and she read the Bible. And this is how she explains it. On Christmas 1982, I accepted Jesus Christ as my personal Savior. It was an amazing turning point in my life. God helped me to learn to forgive. The most difficult of all lessons. It didn't happen in a day, and it wasn't easy. She's admitting as a Christian, it wasn't easy. But I finally got it. And this is what she said. I love this. Forgiveness made me free from hatred. I still have many scars on my body and severe pain most days, but my heart is cleansed. Neopalm, what the Americans use to bomb, is very powerful, but faith, forgiveness, and love are much more powerful. If that little girl in the picture can do it, ask yourself, can you? Can I? We've experienced the power of forgiveness. Oh, may we bless our enemies. Think of Stephen being martyred, being stoned to death. What did Stephen do? Did he pray that the Lord would take revenge on his enemies? He prayed that the Lord would forgive them. And do you know what the Lord did? The eyes of the Lord are on the righteous. His ears are open to their prayers. This is blessing. A man being stoned to death, being able to pray that the Lord would bless his enemies. And what did God do? God took a young man who was standing nearby called Saul of Tarsus, and he more than abundantly answered Stephen's prayer. Stephen's death was the means of converting Saul and transformed him into the Apostle Paul. All because Stephen had forgiven his enemies. So forgiving one another. Let not a root of bitterness so eat into your heart that it becomes a tree. May we know that healing that comes from Calvary, the power of forgiveness. And then there's something else. The second thing, the second digits on the hand. Speech. And I'm calling it pure and honest speech. But this is how Peter, or the psalmist says, he's quoting from Psalm 34, he who would love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceits. Now, there's a lot here. Let me read Psalm 141, not the whole psalm, verse 3. Psalm 141, verse 3. Set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips. I haven't got time to quote from James, James 3. Have you ever prayed? Have you prayed every day, Lord, keep a guard on my lips? This tongue, it's only a small part of the body, but my, what damage can be done on a great scale by such a small instrument? I can't remember who used this illustration. I think it's Ralevik, who's got a book on the tongue. He talks about four soldiers guarding our tongue. Do you know what these soldiers are? This is what you pray. Lord, help me. There's a soldier called Verity. Do you know what Verity does? What's Verity? Truth. Before I speak, I'm asking, is it true? Is it true? We've got so much fake news today. Let's not be guilty of spreading fake gossip. Is it true? And then there's another soldier, and he's called charity. And am I going to be of profits? Is it going to help a person, what I'm about to say about them? Is it going to build them up? I remember Mary in Bala, when I first got to know John and Mary, I was there having a meal with them, and I was a young pastor, and so I had the zeal of youth, and I said too many things about other pastors that I shouldn't have said, and all Mary did was this. And I'm still trying to put that into practice. Charity. Have you got that soldier guarding your lips? There's another soldier, purity. Am I going to speak as Christ speaks, pure words? Imagine the difference it would make in a workplace. I'm not thinking of a Christian now witnessing for Christ in a direct way, but imagine the indirect witness of pure speech. Don't people notice that? I remember when I was a teacher, the talk in the staff room could be a course, even in those days. How much worse it is today. But, oh, what an opportunity for us to stand out, pure speech. And then, this is a good one, the fourth soldier, wisdom. Do you know what wisdom is? Saying the right thing at the right time, in the right way. Oh, for wisdom, wisdom. Do you know what was said of the early church in Acts when the persecution started? I'm going to read from Acts 8. Acts 8, verses 4 and 5. There are two different words here used for preaching in the original. It says in verse 4, therefore those who were scattered went everywhere preaching the word. In the Greek, the word that's used there is gossiping the word. And then we're told that Philip, verse 5, went to the city of Samaria and preached Christ to them. That's the word we use for preaching, heralded Christ. But think of these normal, ordinary believers scattered and gossiping the gospel. You can't organize a gossip, can you? We can't have our evangelism committee organize a gossip outreach meeting for the gospel. Gossip occurs naturally. And there's nothing wrong with gossip in and of itself. The problem with gossip is it tends to bring people down. But think of this kind of gossip. Think of this gossiping the gospel. Isn't that an amazing use for the tongue? This small instrument that can do so much damage, now being transformed and changing people's eternal destinies. Isn't that amazing? That the Lord can use me, not just as a preacher, but as a believer. He can give me words. Wasn't it Havergal who said, take my lips and let them be filled with messages from thee. I need a message every Sunday. Well, I need two messages. Pray, my Christian friend, for me. But pray for yourself that the Lord would give you those divine appointments. So what have we got? Loving our enemies. Pure, honest speech. Then the third digit. I don't want to dwell for too long on this because we've already sort of dealt with it in the previous verse. Again, we're in the quotes from Psalm 34. I've got turning from evil and doing good. Let's see what Peter says in quoting the psalm. Let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. Let him turn away from evil. Do you know what that word means? Turn away. It's a strong word. It means askew evil. Think of Paul writing to Timothy, a young man full of the lusts that young men have. And Paul said to Timothy, Timothy, flee. The same idea. Askew, youthful lusts. One of the lexicons uses this illustration to describe askew. It talks about a horse seeing a mouse and the horse reacting, going as far away as possible. It's like my reaction to a snake. When I first saw a snake as a boy, it was a dead grass snake. They're not poisonous. And I froze. That's what we're to be like when it comes to sin. We don't have anything to do with it. You may say, but it's a small one. Surely it's all right. My friends, the smallest of snakes are the most poisonous. But it's attractive. My friends, the most colorful of snakes are the most poisonous. Have you seen those green snakes? They're not very big. They live in the branches. They're deadly. They're deadly. We were meant to stay in the YMCA in Vizag one year, and they closed it down because they'd had an infestation of those green snakes. Sin is worse. It's deadly, askew. And do good. Do good. Let's look at the fourth digit. Pursue peace. Let him seek peace and pursue it. What did Jesus say in the Sermon on the Mount? Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall inherit the earth. I've often found this verse in pastoral situations to be a great, great help. Romans 14, verse 19. Romans 14, verse 19. Therefore, let us pursue the things. You see, we avoid evil, but then we go after what is good, and one of them is peace. Let us pursue the things which make for peace, and the things by which one may edify another. Another part of the New Testament says, as much as lies in you, seek to be at peace with all people. I'm thinking of a young person in a non-Christian family. You're not in an ideal situation. And what I want to say, if you're in that position, is sometimes you may not be able to do things that other Christians can do freely because you're still under the obligation of your parents. So as much as lies in you, seek to be at peace. In a church situation, we've all got our own preferences. I've got my ideas as to how things should be done. But that's beside the point. What we need is to be at peace with one another. If something destroys that harmony, then we don't do it. It's a lovely thing to be a peacemaker. I remember being in my first ministerial fraternal up in North East Wales. It was a good fraternal. And we used to have some heated discussions. We had men taking two extreme positions, and it used to give some quite interesting discussions. And then we had a retired pastor join us, and he was a man of peace. Not peace at any cost. You didn't brush things under the carpet, but he had such a disposition of peace about him. It transformed the atmosphere. Oh, to be men and women of peace. We sang in that hymn, didn't we, about peace being in this place. And then the fifth digit, and I just want to concentrate on this a bit more. What have we got? Loving our enemies. Pure and honest speech. Turning away from evil, doing good. Pursuing peace. And then, do you know what the fifth one is? Loving life. He who would love life. Does that surprise you? And see good days. Now, think for a moment about this. Here we are in an alien environment. The world is opposed to us. How can you say to us then that we've got to love life? Let me quote Psalm 24. The earth is the Lord's. There's such a thing as the common grace of God. There are good things in life, even in a fallen world, and we're to enjoy them. Now, I came across this quotation from Spurgeon. He's writing or speaking to his students, so it's for ministers, but it applies to all of us. What does it mean to love life? Listen to this. He who forgets the humming of the bees among the heather. They're beginning to hum now, aren't they, this time of year? the cooing of the wood pigeons in the forest, the song of birds in the woods, the rippling of rills among the rushes, and the sighing of the wind among the pines, needs not wonder if his heart forgets to sing and his soul grows weary. And Spurgeon says this, a day's breathing of fresh air upon the hills, or a few hours' ramble in the beech woods, what effect would that have? It would sweep the cobwebs out of the brains of scores of our toiling ministers who are now but half alive. A mouthful of sea air or a stiff walk in the wind's face would not give grace to the soul, but it would yield oxygen to the body, which is the next best thing. I wonder how many of our problems come from the fact that we don't enjoy life. This is God's world. God has given us the good things of life to enjoy, and we're to enjoy them for Him. You know, there is a, I wouldn't call it a heresy, but there's a tendency in our circle called pietism, and it creeps in, unbeknown. And it says some things are spiritual, some things are not. That's not biblical. In my Bible, whatsoever you do to the glory of God. Whether you eat or drink, you can't get more unspiritual than eating or drinking. You do it to the glory of God. Don't you want to live a life of blessing? We call, don't we, saying grace? Sometimes we call it saying a blessing. We're blessing the food. Bless every part of your life. Live it to God. There's nothing spiritual about saying what Solomon said, I think, in his worst moments. Do you know what he said? I hated life for all its vanity and vexation of spirits. The godliest people I've known have loved life, and they've sought to live it to the full because they're living for Jesus Christ. I mentioned John and Mary, even into their late 80s and early 90s, they were still alive. Oh, may we grow old graciously. Oh, look at the context here. Peter was writing to Christians who were already coming under persecution. The psalmist in Psalm 34, what did he say? Many are the afflictions of the godly. And yet, this blessedness, this loving of life, can be experienced in the midst of difficult circumstances. Our blessedness doesn't depend on how things are going. It depends on our relationship with the Lord. And I see everything as coming from Him. And I take it then as a blessing from Him. And think of the world's idea of what's a good day for you? What constitutes a good day for you? Do you remember that advert about a man having problems, and then all he did, this was his answer to the problem, this is what made the day end well, he took a cigar and smoked it, and you had Bach's Air in G-string playing in the background, the Hamlet's advert. Is that a good day? What's a good day in the Bible? Can I give you an example of a good day in the Bible? I'm thinking of two men, two missionaries, and this is a good day for them. They've been imprisoned falsely. They haven't done any wrong. They've been whipped. They must have been in tremendous pain. They've had their feet shackled. They've been put into the innermost dungeon. They could be put to death. And what are they doing? At midnight, what are they doing? They can't sleep. Do you know why they can't sleep? Not because they're worried. Because they're praising God. Now that's a good day. They were blessed in the midst of all that trial. That's blessing. Oh, my friends, let us love life. Some of us have a tendency to see life as something to get through. May God deliver us from that. This is good, this world. because it's God's. Even though it's fallen, it's still his world. And let us seek to know him more and more, his smile, his blessing. And may we go through this world. We don't know how long we've got, but all we know is he's with us. And when it's our time, he'll call us home. And let us walk with the Lord in the light of his word, and knowing just a little bit of glory being shed on our way for his name's sake. Amen.